Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Who was Aleister Crowley? The simple answer, according to Wikipedia, is he was an English occultist, ceremonial magician, poet, painter, novelist, and mountaineer. But what did he do that makes him a known name 70 years after his death? It is no secret he was deeply involved in secret societies, such as the Order of the Golden Dawn and Freemasonry. But his words in his first and most notable book, The Book of the Law, seem to transcend time. The book became the sacred text of Thelema, Crowley's religion he founded in 1904, and the famous words and teachings of "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law" have been publicly adopted by many musicians and prominent figures in entertainment. Is there something sinister behind the meaning of his occult and sex magic teachings? Was he a man deranged by disease? Or was he the vessel used to usher in the Age of Horus, as he claims? Let the introduction to Aleister Crowley begin.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 53.
Yeah.
Aleister Crowley.
So, the winner of the poll on Twitter.
Yeah. Yep.
Cue the Sabbath.
Mr. Crowley.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Andrew.
And we're back.
And we're back.
The last case file, left most people mind-boggled, and
mind-boggled.
I listened back to it, and man, we got drunk.
Yeah, we did. I thought the same thing. I was like, the first hour, and then after that, I was like, maybe we should have called it.
You know, we kind of started talking in circles at the end, but that was a good one. Most people liked it. Some people are like, I just don't understand what you're talking about. I was like, oh, well, neither did we really. But it was fun.
So you guys got flat earthers drunk.
Yeah. We did a full hangout first, like a full hour on Facebook.
Yeah, I remember I was watching part of it. I was at a wedding.
We were beaking you a bit.
Oh, were you? Fuck you. I was trying to beak you, but I couldn't listen to the sound. I think I said I'd rather watch reruns of Corner Gas than another second of this bullshit. I was pretty fucking drunk too, so.
Anyways, that was good. Braden?
It's good. It's fun. It was, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. I like those freewheeling ones like that.
Yeah, where we came up with a lot of, just personal theories.
Yeah, really. It was all
Ones always have to be pretty heavily alcohol induced, I think.
You just get on the track and you just start going.
Right. It's the best.
I hate when you get too drunk, you start slurring so much. Like I was listening back and I was just like, and just space. I was like, oh my gosh.
And then idiot. Like every 2 seconds we'd be like, are you trying to say? Is what you're trying to say that?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That was fun though.
Fucking
good time. Good times. Yeah. I've got the Randomatron up working. The Randomatron X2.
You want to do Randomatron first or Space News first?
Let's do Randomatron first.
Okay, load it up.
Let's load it up right now. I'm putting it in, and I'm hitting the button right now. Wow, listen to that baby purr.
That's what you say every time.
Yeah, wow. Just incredible.
Andrew, did you hear it this time?
I didn't hear anything.
You didn't hear it?
Andrew has no imagination. He's immune to the sound of the machine.
I don't know what the fuck Randomatron is. I'm confused.
If we were in Never Neverland, you'd go hungry because you got no imagination, bud.
It's true.
I would never go to Never Neverland to begin with.
What if you're kidnapped?
Bring it. Fucking pirates. I'm not scared.
Take you in your sleep.
Mm-mm. I don't sleep with one eye open. Especially after doing those fucking Ouija boards and sleep one eye.
If some flying pirates come through your window, Andrew, you're going face down, ass up, and you're like, take whatever you want.
You wish. Not a chance. Pirates aren't scary. Pirates don't scare me.
Well, it's never really seen a real pirate, I guess, so.
Yeah, I see tons of fucking skinny Somalians all the time. I'm not worried about it. Bring that, it.
That's it?
I'm the captain now.
What was that movie called? Captain Phelps.
Captain now.
Captain Phelps?
Captain, my Phillips. Captain.
Captain Phillips, I think.
I don't fucking know.
It's Tom Hanks, wasn't it?
Big, yeah.
Anyways, what the Randomatron spit out?
Tunguska. No, Tunguska meteorite.
Cool.
Tunguska. At 7 o'clock in the morning of the 30th of June, 1908, an enormous explosion was heard from the isolated forests of Siberia, particularly the Tunguska region. Subsequent investigation revealed that there had been a great many hunters and fishermen in the area who had seen an object traveling through the sky. It was described as more brilliant than the sun and heading toward the site of the explosion. So great was the impact that even 800 kilometers away, one train driver stopped his train in disbelief that his own cargo had exploded. Oh, sorry. Stopped his train in the belief, not disbelief, in the belief that his own cargo had exploded. There were shockwaves over a great distance, and the event was recorded all around the world, including London, England. In the 1920s, an expedition to the region discovered that there had apparently been something like an airborne explosion rather than a meteorite impact that the team had expected to find. The debris in the forest was very similar to the debris at Hiroshima following the airborne explosion of the atomic bomb in 1945. In other words, there was total devastation radiating out of one central point, but at the point of ground zero, the destroyed trees were still standing, while the others radiated out from the central point were felled. A meteorite would not have caused such devastation. And of course, in 1908, there could not have been an atomic blast, leaving the speculation that the Tunguska explosion was due to an extraterrestrial nuclear-powered craft exploding in the air.
I know what it is.
However,
I do.
There may be other more natural explanations which have not yet been fully understood by science, i.e., some particularly destructive form of ball lightning.
So hold on, some what?
Particularly
particularly
destructive form of ball lightning or plasma energy.
Yes.
You don't want to know what it was, right?
What was it?
How do you think El Nasty got to fucking Russia?
They sent him down.
Yeah. Let's be serious here. Obviously. When was the incident at Dyaslav Pass? It was in the
47 or something, right?
Yeah. So he's been there since 1908. It's been fucking shit up.
So he came shooting down in a...
Where is this as opposed to Siberia? How close? Where is that in relation? We should look that up.
That's a good question.
Hashtag look it up because I'm not going to.
No, I can't. I broke my phone. It's all shattered. I can't look fucking anything up.
That's an interesting one. So there's
The end?
There's a blast and all the trees are standing at the blast point, and then everything around this point is knocked over.
Well, I'm going to tell you that I'm pretty sure it was an airburst meteorite.
Oh.
Because those do happen where they have enough. They don't have. By the time the air gets so dense when it like comes towards the ground, they just explode in the air. They don't actually impact.
Oh, I guess.
Because there's that one in Russia, like maybe like four years ago, maybe. And it blew out all the windows in the town.
It would have been cooler if it was El Nasty.
Still could have been El Nasty, but it just exploded before it hit the ground. Then he just popped out.
Yeah.
He was like some tight little pod came shooting down and
like a Saiyan.
Like a Saiyan, yeah.
Like the little Saiyan
100
pods.
Feet from the ground, it just exploded. Boom, the whole craft exploded outwards, but he just dropped to the ground.
Totally.
Fell nimbly and just trotted off.
Fucking right. That's what happened. You heard it here first.
So that was the whole story? silver-suited dancing ETs?
Nobody dancing to Herbie Hancock?
No, they, unfortunately, not this week.
No little black pancakes? Nothing cool like that?
Boop, boop.
Boop, boop. Boop, 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 boop.
We're going to get sued. That's a new theme song of the pod.
Can't be sued by a robot.
Yeah, that's true. All right, you want to do space news?
Space news! Stephen Hawking has said we need a new space age. Basically, he's saying that it's time for us to find a new planet as global population is increasing at an alarming rate and we are in danger of self-destructing. So in order to prolong the human race, the human existence, we need to put all efforts into finding another habitable planet and populizing it.
Doesn't work. Populating it? Doesn't work. I watched The Martian. Doesn't work.
So this is what I don't get when people say, like, we need to go to a new planet. Ours is fucked. We fucked it up. We'll just fix this one.
Yeah.
Well, here's some more space news. NASA just said that the hole in the Earth's ozone layer is the smallest it's ever been since 1988.
That's true. She's shrinking. That's over, where is that, over Antarctica?
I think so, yeah.
Yep.
Scotland by 2022 is expecting to be 100% renewable energy.
Oh, like, shit.
I think we're moving in the right direction. So for them to say that we've done irreparable damage, I don't think we've done irreparable damage. I think we're turning a corner.
Well, I think so too. But here's where the little conspiracy comes in. All these people keep saying, we need to get off this planet. We need to get off. Do they know something we don't?
Ooh.
Are they tracking a couple like gigantic asteroids that they're pretty sure are going to hit the planet, but they can't tell anyone yet because they're not too sure? Like, it's not close enough, but they're just making precautions just in case?
I don't want to think about that.
Because there's Apophis. We talked about it with Freddie Silva. I think it's like 2027 or something. They're like, it's going to come close enough to worry, at least.
Really?
That's what they think. Judge it by its elliptical path around the solar system. But I don't know.
What?
Yeah. Oh. Search. Go look up Apophis. NASA Apophis on Google and a whole bunch of articles will pop up. But speaking of new planets.
What's Apophis from? It's bothering me. It's a character from
I think Apophis is some type of Greek god or something like originally, but I don't really know. But speaking of planets, a new planet, which was discovered using NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope, is named. This is the best name for a planet I've heard yet. OGLE-2016-BLG-1190LB.
OGLE!
Yeah, it's the one. And it is the biggest planet they've ever discovered. It's actually so big that they think it actually might not be a planet. It might be a brown dwarf failed sun. So it's not actually, doesn't have its nuclear fusion going on, but it's still like producing heat, they think. But it's giant. It's like 14 times the mass of Jupiter, they think.
Ooh.
Bonkers, eh?
It's insane.
But I'm pretty sure it's fucking way too many far. 22,000 light years, they think. So forget about that one. Not going there. Want to hear one closer to home?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So Saturn's moon, Enceladus, might have had warm liquid water for potentially billions of years. So I guess they've been examining this planet for a while now. It's the one they think, this one and Titan, I think, are the two they think could support some type of life. But judging by their 3D imaging and all their scans that they're doing, there is definitely liquid water underneath the ice caps. Possibly like warm liquid water, because it's like shooting like ice jets into, when the sun hits it, shoots like ice vapor jets into space, pretty much what it looks like from the pictures. So if there's anywhere in the solar system that there's going to be life, they think that's the number one.
I just want to find life in my lifetime. Like, I want to see life on another planet in my lifetime.
Well, they're already here, man.
Even just simple single cell organisms.
Yeah. Because once you get it one place, it's everywhere. It's everywhere, for sure.
Also, Apophis is the bad guy in Stargate.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it was bugging me.
Go back farther, though. Apophis, Greek.
Apophis Greek. Apophis is Egyptian.
Egyptian.
It's the Egyptian god.
Is that what it was?
Okay. But that's where I'm thinking of.
Right. The fucking, that's your connection. Yeah. Right. Braden?
The Kepler may have found up to 20 habitable worlds. Newly discovered exoplanets lying within the habitable zone of their host stars. There's 20, plenty of options out there. KOI 7923.01 seems very Earth-like, and it would have a 395 day calendar. Their year 395, so you get a little extra year.
Winter's a little longer, summer's a little longer.
Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't really know if it had winter summer because they can't really detect that much.
No, it's just in the zone. They don't even know. It might be a Venus.
Just a fucking, what did Dan call it? Greenhouse nasty.
Yeah,
I remember what he said, something funny like that.
Oh, dude, you said something in the last podcast that I wrote down in a note when I listened to. Oh, you said, I want to get it on a t-shirt. You said something to the effect of everyone's just out there big banging.
I think I was talking about multiple big bangs of the universe.
Yeah.
And I ended up using big banging.
Yeah, everyone's somewhere in there. Big banging.
Yeah, I think I might have said something like that.
I had a good laugh.
If you were to really listen back, you probably get a few ridiculous sentences said during that one.
That's pretty much. I don't really have much.
That's what I had today.
That's all I have for space news.
We haven't really been going hard in the space news lately, but we're getting back into it.
I'm trying to stay away from like really dated stuff, like today's, yesterday. So then people listen to this, it's just like interesting facts that you might hear. Like, so if I were to re-listen to this podcast a year from now and you heard that, you'd be like, well, I didn't know that.
That's kind of...
We should change space news to space facts.
No, space news is just space. It's just news of all sorts, but mainly space.
Yeah.
Just because you get all your other news from wherever else. So we'll give you the space portion. All right.
Well,
should we get into it?
On to the beast himself.
Some refer to him as the most wickedest man in the world.
666.
Aleister Crowley.
Is it Crowley or Crowley?
Crowley.
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 Aleister Crowley.
Why would you do it with your hand?
Because it's diabolical. Oh. It's like, you know what I mean? Crowley. Can't help it. I'm a fucking little...
I don't know. Crowley? Crowley?
Crowley? Crowley? I don't know.
Aleister Crowley.
Crowley. Crowley sounds better.
We'll say Crowley.
I think Crowley.
Say whatever you want, but
yeah,
Crowley. He's the root of a lot of different avenues of.
Oh, he was a fucking trendsetter.
Occult, and like symbolism, and like secret societies.
There's so many directions blood magic, to go down the fucking rabbit hole in this guy.
Summoning.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy shit, man. Yeah. So I think, like, because there's a lot of avenues that you could just go down and do a whole podcast on just the one section of it. So we'll probably just kind of just go through his life and then give you a little points that we thought were kind of cool. That's probably how we'll do it, eh?
Yeah, I'm down with that. Who wants to start with him?
Not me. Where's Dan?
Yeah, shit.
Oh, well, not me either. That's the end of the podcast.
And podcast over.
Is Mr. Conspiracy here?
Where's Mr. Conspiracy's notes when you need it? Couple of
blank fucking cue cards. Well, that's it.
And Aleister Crowley is, he was there, and he died.
Yeah.
I read one thing I like that I read about him is, I read in, during World War II, he had worked with the Allies and made, what's it called when you make ads? Why can't I think of the word now? Propaganda. And they would drop these leaflets on the Germans and like German cities and German controlled areas. And it was propaganda posters and it made the Germans seem like they were like Satan worshipers and like occultists and stuff. And it was a way to like demoralize the like German troops. I thought it was kind of,
I did read that too. Yeah.
He designed a lot of them. I was like, oh, that's kind of a, it's kind of a cool,
that is cool.
Yeah. Cool thing.
Apparently he was a spy, wasn't he? Or some people.
Well, dude. Okay. I'll start at the beginning. We'll go through it. There is some like MI5 kind of connections, yeah, that they think like they brought him on just because of who the person, like what kind of person he was. They thought he'd be like the right guy to
fucking
do it.
Fucking weirdo.
But he was born October 12th, 1875. And his real name was actually Edward Alexander Crowley. He ended up changing it when he got older because he wanted to be known and famous pretty much. And he thought like the syllables of that name, Alistair, would be more memorable, I guess.
Totally.
Which it is. Edward Alistair.
Well, and it's got some, I forget what it was. It's got some type of like fucking Gaelic meaning or something like that. I was reading something about it. I can look it back up, but...
Yeah, anyways, I don't know exactly, but that was his original name. And fuck, holy shit, I'm losing my shit here. Uh-oh. Yeah, so he was, 1875 is born, and he died, I'll sum it up real quick. 19, no, I'm just kidding. He was born, and his dad, like his parents were like, his dad was a...
Quaker.
Like, what's a Quaker?
Like a fucking Quaker Oats guy, all religious. And
I was going to say he was some type of like,
he was
priest.
Uber religious. So apparently he was a Quaker, but that wasn't fucking like, that wasn't religious. And you know, that was original, wasn't religious enough.
Right.
So he like left being a Quaker to become even more holy. Apparently like he was,
I did read, he was this like super fundamental Christian
thumper.
I think what's the word? What's that one religion? Evangelical?
Evangelical, yeah.
Evangelical. Yeah, that's the one. That's what his dad was. And I guess he always had a good relationship with his dad, but his mom, he fucking hated her. After his dad died when I think he was like fucking 11 years old or something, right?
She's the one that dubbed him the Beast.
She would always call him the Beast,
yeah,
right?
That's where he got it from.
And then so later in life, he, when all this other shit happened to him, he took it and ran with it.
You gotta be some type of metal motherfucker for your mom to call you the Beast. You know what I mean? Like he must have been one badass kid to be.
But I don't think it was because he like they say like, oh, he was a scholar. He went to like, was it Oxford or wherever the fuck he went?
Well, maybe back then that was the badass book learning.
His father died when he was 11, yeah. And then it says he became increasingly skeptical regarding Christianity, constantly pointing out inconsistencies in the Bible to his religious teachers.
What? Yeah, and, right. And there's then no he holes went, in that.
No, I know. It's a pretty solid book.
Jesus.
And then
this
he
guy
went
just
against,
lost all his credibility for me. End it.
And then he went against the Christian morality of his upbringing by smoking and masturbating.
Yeah.
Masturbating. Horrible
at
kid.
14, it said that he lost his virginity and he had an insatiable like sex drive and he lost his virginity to his mother's maid in his mother's bed.
Yeah.
Nice. So, attaboy.
Get back.
Got started then, early.
Like, he is the Beast. All right.
Having sex with prostitutes like in his teenage years. He contracted gonorrhea. And then I guess he was finally like his mom was sick of him and sent him to live with a tutor in Eastbourne where he took chemistry and he developed interest in chess, poetry, and mountain climbing.
Well, because they were pretty wealthy, right? Like, I guess the family owned a brewery.
He had a lot of money, yeah.
Yeah, the family owned a brewery. And then when his dad died, I guess when he hit, like, whatever, 20 or whatever it was, he inherited all the money.
He got all the money.
Yeah.
So he had the resources to do whatever he wanted. So when he went to school, he dropped out of school. He's like, this is fucking bogus.
Yeah.
He became a mountain climber. And I'm pretty sure he was one of the first people to scale K2.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, like, he was a legit mountain climber.
Fuck. Yeah, I read that he was a mountaineer and like amongst everything else.
He didn't just climb like your local, like, you know, 4,000 foot peak. He was going up these insane, and this is like way back in the day before oxygen and like all these other like modern climbing assists. Braden?
I'm listening.
I never know what the Skype problems we have sometimes.
Yeah, no, I was listening. The guy lived like an interesting life. Like when you look at.
He,
I think
the
least amount
of
fucking interesting things he's done is climb K2.
And that's the truth of it all. So then he goes to Cambridge University, where he continues his mountaineering.
It was either before or after. I'm not sure which one it was.
This is where he had his first mystical experience, was while he was attending Cambridge. And he discovered that he was bisexual and started engaging in same-sex experiences, even though they were legal at the time.
Legal or illegal?
Illegal!
While at Cambridge, a very vigorous sex life with women, largely female prostitutes, from one of whom he caught syphilis. He had gonorrhea before. Oh. Now he's caught syphilis.
Oh, so he's just working his way through.
He's working his way up, yeah.
So he got syphilis at what age?
I don't think he got syphilis because doesn't syphilis fuck you up?
Syphilis will kill you. He lived till he's like 80.
Without treatment. Without
treatment, it kills you.
That's what killed Al Capone.
But I don't think there was treatment for syphilis before 50s, 1950s.
Well, maybe he cured it with magic.
He was a magician.
Maybe he did.
So now this is where he starts to get interesting.
He gets into his many secret societies.
Maybe
he starts jumping through them.
Maybe syphilis made him crazy.
You think so?
Maybe.
Maybe he wasn't crazy. Well, I read a lot of things where people he was villainized for his thinking.
Oh, totally.
Not necessarily that he was crazy. He just thought different. He's like 100 years ahead of his time, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, for sure. There is some other shit though. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's like he's not crazy. He's just like he has such a wide spanning life from like his childhood to where he ended up is like so different.
He's pretty fucking rad. Like, yeah, there's some fucked up shit, but he's pretty rad.
It's no wonder people fall in love with the story of Crowley.
No, like, totally.
Especially all these rock gods,
there's
right?
a reason why fucking Sabbath wrote a song about him.
He's badass.
He fucking writes.
So, okay, so he started basically getting into mysticism and magic and secret societies and
the occult.
The occult, yeah.
So this is where the first one he joined was the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which I guess was a secret society where many, many like high ranking political and high ranking people of society joined this, where they practiced magic. But after he was in it for, I think, only 2 years, and he rose like pretty quick through the ranks, but he quit because he said all the people in this society don't really understand what they're doing. Like, they're trying to summon this shit, but they're just doing it half-assed because they, want to be part of it because everyone's doing it. He's like, I want to take it to the next level.
No, he wants real life magic.
He wants real magic.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
He's, you know what he is? You know what he is? He's just a overconfident muggle is what he is.
thinks he has magic, but...
Yeah.
Maybe he does have magic as we...
So, sorry, what was that? What was that society?
Order of the Golden Dawn.
Yeah. So... And then he left there. I also read something about that he got kicked out because of being gay.
Well, yeah, I think he listened to a lot of things, and people from that era say he got kicked out because of his sexual orientations and that kind of
stuff.
Yeah,
he just
went against everything they were doing. So like, this guy's got to go, pretty much. So
yeah, right.
I bet you that's what happened.
Pulling a Louis C.K. in the corner.
Hey, check this out. Yeah, you want to be famous? Look at this.
They say he joined something called the Old George Pigingil Witch Coven. Ooh. So that was his next secret society, but he was not welcome for pretty much the same reasons. Irresponsible attitude and inclinations toward homosexuality. Which was shocking at the time, even to witches, in quotes, and when I'm reading this. Yeah, man, he just keeps going, too. After that, he joins the Freemasons, where he pretty much, he's a badass Freemason, too. He gets a lot of fucking Freemason degrees, and he attained his 33rd and last degree of the Scottish Rite in Mexico. And there's some quotes about him accepting it and shit, but I'm not going to read them. So he's gone through all of these religions, or not really, all these cults and secret societies, and they're not doing it for him. The people, he doesn't get along with them. They're not doing enough magic.
Not hardcore enough.
They're not hardcore enough.
Not for the Beast.
Not for the Beast. Well, he's not the Beast yet. He hasn't called himself the Beast yet.
Yeah, but he's always been the Beast. His mom was calling him the Beast. He's been the fucking Beast since grade school, man.
Yeah, this is where it becomes. This is like where it all started from what everyone kind of says. In 1904, Crowley and his wife visited Egypt for their honeymoon, and during this trip is where he wrote his most famous book, Liber Legis, or the Book of the Law, which would become the cornerstone of his life and the book of his religion after this.
But what, Thelmia?
Thelmia, I think it's called. Yeah. But I guess what it was Crowley's his wife led him into a museum in Cairo, and they came across this, I think it was, 7th century mortuary stele? I don't know actually how to say that.
Well, so first before this, like he got this place in Egypt, I was reading.
Yeah.
And he kept doing these ritualistic seances and shit like that, right? And every day he was saying that his wife Rose, right? Was it Rose? Pretty sure his wife's name was Rose.
Yeah.
Kept getting a little bit more like off and off. And she would wake up in the middle of the night and be like, he's calling me. He's calling me. We got to go here. And he's like, where do you want to go? And she's like, Horus is calling me.
Right.
And they're in Egypt, right?
Yeah.
And apparently she knows nothing of like the Greek or the Egyptian gods.
She had no history
of
Egyptians.
Nothing like that. And she kept saying, Horus is calling me. And you know what I mean? And he knows, is Horus the god of the sun? Horus. Horus is the falcon, I think.
I'm not familiar.
I'll have to look it up. But anyway, so that's right. So he's calling him to the museum, right?
Oh, so his wife was being channeled supposedly.
Yeah.
While she dreamt. And she'd wake up and be like, he's calling to me.
Yeah,
we need to go here.
We gotta go here. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I did read that too, actually. That's right. It's a fucking good call there. And then when they get there, the exhibit's number is 666.
The number of the beast.
The number of the beast.
Of the beast.
Fuck yeah.
666. Yeah. Number of the beast in the book of Revelation. So right there.
We all really need to work on our Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah, we do.
I fucking butchered it.
Yeah. Sorry. Fuck. So. I thought I had something else on there, but I didn't really.
Well, yeah, so that's where it gets the number 666 from. Just fucking badass. He's the guy that fucking invented the number of the beast. Like, that's pretty rad.
That is pretty crazy. Oh, okay, that's what it was. After that, I guess they took part in a magical ritual during which he alleges to have received a message from the entity named Eowas. Doesn't really say who that is, but
that's the god that his whole Thelema or whatever is that based on.
Oh, okay. And that's actually right after that he wrote his first three chapters of the Book of the Law.
Yeah.
And what he thought when he wrote, pretty much he wrote this book, he said it would revolutionize the way like mankind lived. Like getting away from religion like that and going back to like just like do whatever you want.
Well, what's his quote? Thou shalt do what thou will or whatever.
Do what thou will.
Yeah,
do that's what like, thou that's will. That's what he ended up living for. Like that was like those.
That was the original YOLO.
Yeah.
Do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, then think about that effect of that quote, like on today's society of just like do whatever the fuck you want. Like it really is now, of like there is no. Like I don't necessarily know if it's a negative thing. Like there's so much more tolerance and stuff for.
Well, it is a good and it's a bad thing. You do what thou will. If a bunch of fucking white preppy dudes want to go marching around a university, fucking, you know, dressed up like KKK people, fucking, they're allowed to do it.
Do what you will within reason.
Yeah. Like, well, do you think that's what he means though?
I bet you he did. I bet you what Crowley meant. I bet you he meant that. I don't think he didn't mean KKK. I think he just meant like stop believing in the brainwashing of religion. Do what thou will. Right? Which where some people would take that. Some people would take that as have sex with all the prostitutes you can.
Well,
and do a bunch of drugs.
The whole quote is "Do what thou will shall be the whole of the law." So just. Pretty much like do what you want is that, and that's the law. That's it.
It's pretty open for interpretation. It's
fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's what I try and do, but it doesn't quite work out.
It doesn't pay the bills.
It does not pay the bills.
No.
Unfortunately.
So yeah, it's, but yeah, that's a tough one. Cause it can be, you can definitely take that in a negative, but you could take that in a positive too.
Yeah.
So, Okay, so he writes this book. Where were you going with that?
So that's the start of his religion. And so after that, he started what was called the Thelmic religion. Is that what it's called? Thelmic?
The Thelema or whatever?
Thelemic
would make sound, that makes sense. I don't know if that's really what it was called, but I know it's the Thelmia, right?
The Thelema.
Thelema.
Right. Thelema. Let's go with that. So pretty much he wrote this book and it was like the new eon was going to be the age, pretty much the age of Horus is what he said. Because Horus was the one who contacted him. He thought it was like an entity contacted him to, you know, bring his teachings back to the world. And that's what he thought pretty much the whole time. So this is the opening lines of the Book of the Law. Had the manifestation of Nuit, the unveiling of the company of heaven, every man and woman is a star. Every number is infinite. There is no difference. Help me, O warrior, Lord of Thebes, in my unveiling before the children of men. That was the opening line of... So it reads pretty much like a religious text, but it's not saying God did this or God did that. Yeah, then here's actually three laws. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law. Love under will, every man and every woman is a star. And his sign for it was the Unicursal Hexagram, which is like it looks like two Star Trek symbols, one up, one down.
See, and
this sounds pretty damn good to me. I don't see evilness.
I watched a documentary earlier today, not a documentary, but like a quick 20-minute video. And one of the things it was based on that Book of the Law, and it was saying that, and it definitely was shining it in a negative light. It was saying that the powers of B are like Illuminati and stuff and believers of Crowley's theologies. And they kind of went into all like the pedophile rings and stuff. But what they said is do what thou will. And they said like the subversion of like just good and like giving people too much freedom to make choices. And it was quoting like having parents give 5-year-olds pills to stop them from going through puberty and weird stuff like that. But then it also said, I was talking about that everyone's a star. And then it was talking about like how Facebook and like the culture's brainwashed into like, I got to post something so all my fans are like adore me and all that stuff. It was an interesting 20-minute read or watch of them saying that all the higher ups are still kind of believing in those three laws.
And oddly enough, too, do you know who used to practice all his rituals and shit like that?
Probably
L. Ron Hubbard.
I did hear that connection brought up.
Fucking weirdo, too.
Yeah, so like all that stuff in like Hollywood and like high-ranking politicians. Like you can go down a rabbit hole that way, like big time. And what that is, so after he wrote the Book of the Law, he was part of the creation of this thing called how you pronounce this?
Oh, the OTO or whatever.
The OTO, Ordo Templi Orientis. And that was pretty much, it was like a spin-off of Freemasonry with like a stage series of initiations or degrees to like become a member. And the lower one, and it's all like based on what he called sex magic. So it's all based on sex and bodily fluids and like doing weird shit with the bodily fluids.
Dude, man, I'll read this little paragraph because now that we're talking about bodily fluids, sexuality played an, I highlighted this because it grossed me out earlier. Sexuality played an important role in Crowley's ideas about magic and his practice of it and has been described as being central to Thelema. He outlined three forms of sex magic, the autoerotic, homosexual, and heterosexual, and argued that such acts could be used to focus the magician's will onto specific goals such as financial gain or personal creative success. For Crowley, sex was treated as a sacrament, with the consumption of sexual fluids interpreted as a Eucharist. I don't know what that word is. This was often manifested as the cakes of light, a biscuit containing either menstrual blood or a mixture of semen and vaginal fluids.
Crowley made the cookie race.
Boys,
that's fucked.
If we bust some nuts on some cakes and eat them, our podcast is going to cook through the roof. Personal creative success.
I'm good.
And I think what you're talking about, I think level 9, if I'm reading that correctly.
That's level 9.
Of the Ordo Templi Orientis. Orientis. Do you want me to read? Do you want me to read? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 5.
Yeah, I want it.
So not called. There's called V2, V3, like Roman numerals. V yeah. line, V3 lines.
Rocky 1, Rocky 2, Rocky 3.
And then XI. So I guess these are all the levels of the blood magic to become part of the upper echelons of this order. Ordo Templi Orientis, or OTO for short. So the first level, V11, adoration of the phallus both within or without. Both within, I don't know, both within? I can't really.
Was that penetration or hand job?
It's very vague. We'll go to the next one. This one's a little more sex magic-y. Interactions outside the closed vessels of the vagina and the anus. Sexual fluids might be mixed with saliva and then rubbed into the absorbent tissues of the anus and perineum, as well as the external correspondences to the chakras, solar plexus, heart, throat, third eye, and crown. They might also be used to anoint the internal anus, then transferred as a triune elixir, semen, anal elixirs, and saliva back to the mouth. The fluids may also be anointed on the eyelids.
Never go ass to mouth.
They may be anointed on the eyelids and or the entire Kabbalistic middle pillar.
So this guy's just tossing out gonorrhea on fucking Ritz crackers.
So
just handing it out left, right, and
this
center.
This is the fucking sex magic.
Jeez.
These are the levels of the sex magic. And what you were talking about is the 1X, I think, interaction within the vagina involving either menstrual blood or the secretions of a woman when sexually aroused. But you said something about putting on a fucking...
The cake of light.
That's crazy.
It contains honey, oil, and body fluids. And it is usually cooked in the shape of a small flat wafer. It appears in two important Thelmic rituals, the Gnostic Mass and the Mass of the Phoenix. However, Crowley thought it was important for magicians to perform these rituals of some kind daily.
Daily.
Eating jizz on the rag.
Yes.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Gross.
Okay, there's two more. You want to hear them?
Yeah, let's hear them.
X was impregnation and fertilization of an egg, also the act of creation or succession. So I guess that one's pretty... That's the most normal one. Get someone pregnant. XI is twofold. And Crowley's favorite was the second one. I'll read. Isolation in the anus where there was no interaction at all. What does that really mean? Isolation
it means you,
in the anus.
You stick in their butt without even talking to them.
Just right.
Glory hole anal. Just fucking hole in the wall.
Surprise!
Wait, read that again.
No lube.
Isolation in the anus where there is no interaction at all. Is that like propping open the butt? And then this like
and then, dry. And then everyone looks away and like gives you the silent treatment while you sit there.
I don't know.
It's fucking so weird, man.
I don't know. And then the second portion was interaction with excrement and small amounts of blood when small wounds occur through intercourse, mucus, and of course the mucous membranes that lead directly to the blood supply. Aleister Crowley's own personal preference. And this is a quote. I'm inclined to believe that the XI degree is better than the 1X degree. Oh, that's in the quote. Diary entry on the 26th of August, 1916.
That's how you get an infection. That's not all so good, man. Can't be getting fecal matter.
So it's a... There's actually... I looked it up. There is still to this day these orders existing. Ordo Templi Orientis Canada. At oto-canada.org.
Should see if we get somebody on.
If you're interested. But where they don't really say, for the lower levels, they make it sound very like, oh, it's just like Freemasonry, like it's a brotherhood, a fraternity. And then it says at the upper levels.
And that's a big key
careful.
Party.
Careful.
Yeah. It's a big key party, man.
So no. These things do exist. There's one in the States. There's probably one in every country. So his teachings to this day are still his sex magic is still being pushed through.
Thank God.
It's crazy.
It's gross.
So how does this tie into pedophilia? I hear about that a lot. Aleister Crowley and pedophilia.
It's a good question. Do you know? I didn't go down the rabbit hole that far.
What I read is because, like you said, lots of this is sex magic and stuff. One of the ones of a child, I can't remember where I read it, but it basically says that, like, I think it's in the book of magic and theology in like chapter 7. Now I can't find my notes, so I'm just going by memory. But it says that a male boy is the best. A small male child is the best.
I heard that was for the actual sacrifice. Like,
yeah, but they also refer to what I've read is that sacrifice doesn't necessarily mean to like kill them, but it also means to like you're sacrificing their body and like their like innocence. Ugh. As like a form of like magical, right? And then it goes back to it says you think you can these sex acts can focus a magician's will onto specific goals such as financial gain and personal creative success. You just like you hear a lot of these high powered Hollywood like pedophilia rings and like there was that Pizzagate a while ago with like. All the political things.
Pizzagate is fucking a crazy thing. We have to do a case file on it.
Yeah. Okay, what? I didn't fall down the Pizzagate rabbit hole because I was reading about the Hollywood one. What's the Pizzagate one? I just know it had something to do with Hillary Clinton's released emails.
Well, it's actually a good conspiracy case file. But a quick summary is through like those leaked Podesta emails from John Podesta to Hillary Clinton. There was a lot of like. Slang and like code words used that didn't make sense for what like just if you were just email something they're definitely code words for something.
It was like fucking meet us at the pizza parlor at 10 a.m. There's gonna be lots of fucking
we're gonna have like a cheese pizza and an all meat pizza and they're supposed to like mean like little girl little boy and like all these weird things and it's like straight from the FBI websites like that's what they the terms they use for like pedophilia like all on like the dark web they'll like use these codes so these codes came up in the emails and people are like, well, what the fuck are these? And there's like, oh, they're nothing. That's just how we talk. You're like, what the fuck? And like some of these places, like this comet, there's this place called Comet Ping Pong and it had one of these symbols of a pedophilia in the logo of the place. And shortly after Pizzagate, they changed it. But in that place, there was like pictures of like half naked children, like 10 or younger in the pizza parlor. And this is like a kid's pizza parlor where people have their birthday parties and shit. And at John Podesta's house, there's all these weird pedophilia style like art. Like, they look like children's statues, like spread eagle or like looking backwards or like intertwined or bound up and all this weird shit. So there's a lot of weird shit with that one, man. That one. And with all the recent like pedophilia busts around the world, you got to wonder how high up that chain goes.
And then it makes you think that are they practicing some weird. Like sex magic.
Yeah. Like I wouldn't be surprised if they're practicing some type of like accelerated version of what Crowley started. Like the order kept going and Crowley died. Right. But obviously it's been like 70 years since he died.
Well, he had so many fault, like L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons used to practice Crowley's shit.
Jack Parsons was the rocket guy, right?
Yeah.
He was part of the
JPL.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, he could even do just a podcast on him.
Yeah, there's some good stuff.
All that, like, they say he blew himself up getting into alchemy and stuff like that. Like, pretty fucking cool.
Yes, yeah. So that's where Crowley's like a starting point to like 400 different rabbit holes you can just go.
Oh, it's crazy.
Anyways, I got lost where we were.
We were talking about his sex magic, and then we kind of got into the pedophilia rings of this age.
Right.
But yeah, like he in that book, like Magic and Theology, like, he outlines like how to try to bring about like spirits and he talks about the sacrificial circles and getting different animals for different uses and like depending what you want to do with them. And this is all in this book, Magic. I think it's called Magic and Theology. And he talks about like using a virgin goat in some forms, but the most powerful is that of a child. Not saying they had to kill a child, but does say the blood of a child is the most powerful. And like he really tried to was very big on like trying to call demons and spirits and
that's where we're going next.
Yeah.
So you have like 40 pages of notes there on this, I think.
Handwritten
notes.
I went down the rabbit hole, man. I could.
He went down.
So, all right, let's hear it.
So, are you stemming from his ritual of that Abramelim?
Yeah, that's what, well. So, what I have is just like a little brief synopsis of it, and then how it ties to one of the most famous guitar players in the history of rock and roll.
I love it.
I love it too so much.
So you're talking about his place in London where he did the 6-month ritual?
It was in Scotland.
Scotland, sorry.
Loch Ness.
Right. Okay, so let's hear.
Okay, let's start it off.
Okay. Well, and then you can go into detail about Abramelin after if you want. But
there's not a lot of detail. It's pretty short, so.
So, Abramelin, what's Amarillin, you ask? See, I got the nice big question mark there. So, Abramelin, the book of the sacred magic of Abramelin the Mage. So basically it was a story of a Jew named Abraham of Worms, and he was passing his magic and Kabbalistic secrets onto his son. And this is what this book's about, right?
Yeah.
And Abraham the Jew learned all this secrets, magic and stuff like that from a mage named Abramelin that was living outside the desert, just outside the Nile in Egypt.
Right.
Okay. So basically... This mage, Abramelin, supposedly made Abraham swear an oath that he was going to serve and fear the God that this whole Abramelin religion is based on, and he was going to live and die by his law. In exchange for doing that, Abramelin gave Abraham the secrets to the divine science and the true magic embedded in these two manuscripts. Okay, and then so this whole book goes through how you bring out that divine science.
So these manuscripts are from how long ago?
Oh, fuck.
Because they were rediscovered in like the 1400s or something, right?
This is
like ancient Egypt stuff, right?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say ancient Egypt. I'd say...
Because it wasn't until the 19th century where they actually translated them to like a good copy to English. It wasn't
until the 1400s, yeah.
The 1400s, where they actually translated it back to English, right?
So this is... So, yeah, I guess you could say ancient Egypt.
Because I can actually find where, like, what date, like, when it was actually...
Yeah, try and find that. But so in these manuscripts, it described a ritual, and the purpose of that ritual was to obtain knowledge in a conversation with this figure that they called... the best translation was a magical guardian angel. And the preparations for this ritual apparently are so fucking insane that no one was able to successfully do it than this Abraham. They'd
be so dedicated, right?
Crazy dedicated, right? Yeah. So, you know what I mean? It hadn't been done since this Abraham guy had done it. And of course, Crowley stumbles upon this book of Abramelin. And this is right after he decided to either get kicked out or... After the Golden Dawn.
Yeah.
And he states, he's like, this is fucking foo-foo magic.
I want some real shit.
And he was stated saying that I'll do whatever it takes to get this. And Abramelin was like some serious dark magic, right? And he was willing to go do whatever cost. So sacrificing or banging little dudes, I don't know. He was willing to do whatever it takes.
He was committed.
So he's so committed to pulling this ritual off that he took that money that his inheritance from his father, right? And purchased this real isolated property, this house, just to perform this ritual. And it was located in Loch Ness in Scotland.
So cool.
Right? And it was called the Boleskine House. Okay. And I got some more information on this Boleskine House in a bit.
Someone bought that house later in the future, didn't they?
Well, I got even more, though. Like, nice. What happened before fucking...
Hey, you just keep going, man. Use those notes.
So now... He buys this house. He gets everything dialed in. And as we know now that you've seen, you've seen Crowley bounce from like religion to religion or group to group, right? To find his own way. And he kind of bounces all over the map. So he put some solid time into this, but lo and behold, it was too tiresome and exhausting for him, right?
He didn't finish.
So he didn't finish. And it said in this book, first of all, the first thing it says in this the manuscripts is do not do this, right? It says do not do this. And it says if you do this incorrectly, you're opening, you know, yourself up to and whatever the world to evil spirits and demons. And if you do not close this properly, you're opening yourself up to possession.
You're thinning the veil.
Totally. So there we go. Boom. Case closed. He takes off from this Bolskin house. Didn't work. He taps out.
Did it say how long he did it for?
I think it was 6 months.
No, it was supposed to be 6 month ritual.
Yeah. I think he attempted it for 6 months, but
he didn't get through 6 months though.
He couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So now you heard me talking about a famous rock and roll star. So cue Jimmy Page.
Jimmy.
If you don't know who Jimmy Page is, then fuck you. Look it up. Grow up. You should probably figure it out.
I just listened to Led Zeppelin 4 today on the way home from work, actually.
That's arguably the best album ever made.
It's got to be in the top 10.
Well, definitely top 10.
I'd say top 3.
Well, rock albums for
rock
sure.
Rock albums ever made. Yeah.
Anyways.
So Jimmy Page, founder of Led Zeppelin, lead guitar, badass dude. So Jimmy Page was known for being obsessed with the occult at a young age. 15 years old, took to Aleister Crowley's books, reading his diaries, all that kind of stuff, and got really into it. And then so right at the beginning of Led Zeppelin, right? This is before they're even famous. According to Richard Cole, who's their road manager, he overheard Jimmy at the end of a fucking like drug fueled alcohol fucking crazy party. Like this is right when they're starting to play, so they're still fucking living the, you know, getting into all the rock star bullshit, right? They're loving it. He's wasted, high. He heard him confess to these groupies that were, you know what I mean, kind of into the occult, they were saying, and he's kind of standing in the background and listening to them talk. He heard that everyone in the band except John Paul Jones, who was the bassist, had done this secret ritual, selling their souls to the devil in exchange to become the greatest rock and roll band of all time.
It's awesome.
Now, when this was brought up to him, right, because he overheard it, and the manager brought it up to them, you know what I mean? Because he's like, oh, I heard you guys talking about this. Like, what, you know what I mean? It's pretty fucked up. Like, you know, give me some more information on this. Jimmy went into a fucking crazy fit of rage and fucking fired him. And was like, if anybody else wants to bring that up, you're fucking gone.
It's crazy.
Right? Okay. So let's go to 1971. Or fast track 1971, Led Zeppelin's, I think 1971 would have been right after Led Zeppelin 3 came out. Okay. So
between Zeppelin 1 was 67?
Yeah.
66, 67.
So right after Led Zeppelin 3 comes out.
Right.
Okay. Jimmy Page, obsessed with the occult and Aleister Crowley, buys the Bolskin house. Okay, this Bolskin house was built on the same property. So even before fucking Crowley bought it, it was built on the same property that there was a church. And the church caught fire and the entire congregation burnt alive in that fucking house.
Wait, say that again?
The fucking house.
What?
That's why Crowley bought this house. Like, not only was it fucking secluded, but he, you know what I mean? It was right beside a graveyard, and that graveyard was filled with all the fucking people that burnt alive in that church. The entire congregation burnt alive in the church.
So it was before Crowley bought it.
Before Crowley bought it.
Holy fuck.
Right?
That's insane. Nice try on flipless pages without crinkling. That's all good. People know you're trying if you're actually flipping real pages.
So like I was saying, Page bought this house right after Led Zeppelin 3, right? Zeppelin 3.
Yeah.
So him and Plant actually did a lot of the fucking writing for Zeppelin 4 in that house.
That's why it's so good.
Okay. One day, Robert Plant said that Jimmy started playing this music, these riffs that he'd never heard before. And he can't fucking explain it. But he just started, he wasn't even thinking. He was just writing.
Just came pouring out.
The words to Stairway to Heaven just came pouring out of him.
Oh, so creepy, man. I got shivers.
And like, okay, so, you know, just quick side note here. Stairway, you know, like everybody knows Stairway to Heaven, you play backwards, right?
Oh,
some of the words
makes it even weirder.
Some of the things that you, when you play backwards of fucking Stairway to Heaven is, so here's to my sweet Satan. We'll give him those with 666. Okay, that's just some of the shit. So, Page produces Led Zeppelin 4 himself, or Zeppelin 4. Self-titled. It's not even, we call it Zeppelin 4, but it's not. It's untitled, right?
It was just the fourth one called Led Zeppelin.
And
right?
It was just, yeah. Exactly. The cover is a variation of the tarot card, the Hermit. And the inside cover has each member represented by symbols. Okay? And there's everybody, each member picked their own symbols. Do you guys know what?
I know what you're talking about.
Jimmy picked the symbol of Zozo.
Yeah.
And he's never, he refused. The only person that knows why he picked that is Robert Plant. And Robert Plant hasn't told anybody. He won't explain why he picked Zozo.
To this day?
To this day. Hasn't told anybody. So, it's said that, so Page had lots of friends and family and stuff like stay with him in this Bullskin Manor. Okay. And everybody knows Jimmy, he embraced the occult. And he had a number of guests come over and stay over with him. And one of his childhood friends, Malcolm Dent, said people that stayed in this house would just randomly wake up between 2:30 and 3 in the morning feeling strange and having like crazy ass headaches, and people would have to leave. Okay? And like 3 o'clock's the haunting hour. Right? And this is the same house that fucking Crowley opened up that fucking...
Well, he was supposed to perform the ritual at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. And he never closed it. And in 1975, Page believed that a headless man was haunting the Bullskin house. So he called his friend, Kenneth Anger. Do you guys know who Kenneth Anger is?
The name sounds really familiar.
He was this old school, like he's an underground filmmaker and one of the founding members of the Church of Satan.
Really?
So he called him to help perform a fucking exorcism. In exchange...
Demonic exorcism, like a satanic exorcism.
I don't know. At this time, I don't know if he was part of the Church of Satan, but
right.
So in exchange, so he's an underground filmmaker, right? So in exchange for doing this exorcism, Page agreed to score his film, Lucifer's Rising. Okay, now fuck it. Lucifer's Rising began in production in 1967, but was plagued by tragedy. While filming this movie, a 5-year-old boy who was supposed to be playing Lucifer's child leapt from his apartment to his death.
Okay. 5-year-old kid.
Bobby Beausoleil, cast to play Lucifer's, the teen Lucifer, joined the Manson family and murdered a school teacher.
Oh, fuck.
In 1967, while editing this film, which, so I don't know if this was, I'm trying to figure out, I was doing, trying to do some research. And it says they were editing the film at Bullskin Manor, and then another one said it was done at some type of like mill manor or something like that. So I don't know if this was actually edited. It's not really that important, but anyways. So while editing it in 76, Page finally finished the score for this, right? Kenneth Anger listens to it and is like, what the fuck? Like, this is way, 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 way too fucking morbid and fucked. Like, we can't use this. This isn't what I asked you for at all. Right? And so he shits all over it. Page is in a fucking fit of rage, kicks him out of his house, and keeps the film. Says, fuck you, beat it, kick rocks, right? This fucking... And then this time, Kenneth Anger is all in the Church of Satan now. He's a known fucking weirdo. He publicly puts a curse on Jimmy Page. Okay, publicly puts a curse on Jimmy Page. Says, admits it, yeah, I cursed him, whatever. So then, boom. While on tour in 1977, they returned to the States. That's the shirt.
That's that shirt.
Yeah. So in 1977, Robert Plant receives word that his 5-year-old son died suddenly of a mysterious virus. 1980, John Bonham, drummer for Led Zeppelin, dies of emesis asphyxiation.
Choked on his own puke, right?
Choked on his own puke. Fearing these events were caused by this curse, Jimmy Page goes into a crazy fucking heroin addiction, spiral downhill. Zeppelin breaks up.
Crazy.
Fucked, eh? And there's so much, like, I left out a lot of stuff, but like, you look at all their albums, there's like that.
There's occult symbolism in all of them.
All of them. Like, what's the album with all the kids climbing up the fucking hill? And then there's one guy, there's one person standing there holding up a child. And that's supposed to, like, that's their sacrifice of this child to be fucking rock stars. Like, it's crazy, man.
And it all goes back to Aleister Crowley saying you can make these sacrifices for fame and personal success, creative success.
Well, Page was into Crowley since he, like, as far back as they date as he was like 14, 15 years old.
Man. Well, Crowley was dead before Page was born, probably, yeah. Right?
No, but he was
that's, but that's what I'm saying, but
he opened up a bookstore in London called The Equinox, which was titled after one of Crowley's
books.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And that was the only place you could find Crowley's books. And they say he opened it just because he couldn't find these books anywhere. You know what I mean? He wanted his own
personal library. So crazy.
Like fucking crazy shit like that.
Man, it's so weird because then even in the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Band, the album cover there,
yep.
They have, it's the Beatles and then who they said is all their influence and people they look up to. Top left corner is Aleister Crowley.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Right? At the time, the biggest band in the world, right? And then... they have Aleister Crowley, this like...
I'd say the Beatles and the Stones definitely dominated the 60s.
Yeah.
Definitely. More so 100%. The Beatles. But 70s was Zeppelin, man.
Zeppelin was the biggest rock band of all time.
Just fuck it. You couldn't touch them.
Like, for a band like they were, like a four-piece rock band. With they're insane.
Totally.
Man. Okay. So let's say this. Let's say that's a curse. Okay. Say the Beatles, all the members of the Beatles sell their soul to the devil to have the greatest rock band and the greatest band in the world. Right. So they sell their soul. And then, you know how they always say it's like, oh, well, you don't have ties. Well, or you don't have, the devil plays tricks. You never get what you ask for. There's always some kind of trick to it. So then the Beatles get that. And then Jimmy Page comes along. They do this. And now they're the biggest band in the world right now. They've taken over. So essentially like more people can sell their souls to become that. But it never says for how long or how long you're going to be the best band in the world for. You know what I mean?
It's a 10-year deal. You ever watch Supernatural?
Yeah. Well, and you know what else is pretty fucking like when you think about it? Like, okay, so... the Beatles could have apparently done the same thing, right? Sell their soul. And like, look how it's come back to fucking haunt them. Like there's the two surviving members and they don't even own the fucking music anymore. You know what I mean? Like they don't own the music. Michael Jackson bought the rights to all their music.
Crazy.
Like, you're the biggest, you were the one of the biggest bands in the world. You don't even own that music anymore. Like it's fucking crazy. Like it's like, you can't make that up. Like, of course they're being punished. You know what I mean? Like it's crazy.
They probably stopped doing the blood magic or whatever they're fucking. So what, like, when you sell your soul to the devil, what do you do? What's the ritual? Because I want to do it. I'm sitting here.
I'll send you a cookie in the mail. You just eat it.
I got the bands in four cities. They're all within 1 hour. That's pretty good, but that's nowhere near what you got to do to sell your soul to become famous.
But maybe it's not even selling your soul. Maybe it's just doing this blood magic, right?
So, well, maybe not even the blood magic. Maybe it's this ritual that Crowley did. Maybe Zeppelin did it.
Maybe
Page did the ritual between the Yardbirds and Zeppelin. And he's like, 6 months, I'm fucking doing the ritual. And at the end of it, his guardian angel or the devil, whoever the ritual is supposed to summon.
Who's the first band? Like, I'm trying to think, like, Is it Robert Johnson was the first guy that they said sold his soul?
I have no idea.
You know Robert Johnson, right? The old blues musician that sold his soul to Crossroads?
I've watched a documentary on that before, yeah. But I don't know if he's the first. I mean, maybe it was fucking Mozart or something.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you never know.
And these old guys are just like, all of a sudden wrote these crazy symphonies on, like in their minds. They're like, yep, that's it.
Well, that's what they, like in the Bible, it says like, that's the way to the devils with fucking music. And you know what I mean? And like, you look at the logo and it's like, okay, oh, it's Icarus. He flew too close to the sun. Well, you know what I mean? Like it's all you know is that this is a fallen angel or it's Icarus. And who's the most famous angel that fell from fucking heaven.
Lucifer.
Exactly. Is this Icarus or is this fucking Lucifer?
You know what? You know what? A coolest theory I've ever heard on the Bible is like the greatest lie ever told was that Lucifer who fell from heaven was really God and God is really the devil. And God has just tricked everyone into thinking that he is the man. So God has to do with the Bible and all this shit. He has tricked everyone. He overthrew overthrew God. I've seen this video before. If you think about it, if God is the nicest, if like the greatest being ever live, right? And he's supposed to be all knowing and all powerful, but lets his people suffer and his creation suffer and like just death and destruction all over the world. I've heard the theory before that God was overthrown and Lucifer was the enlightened one. Like he was tossed out of heaven and really God was the devil.
He just fucking blew my
and
mind.
He has flipped. Imagine that. The greatest lie ever told is that God was overthrown back whoever knows whenever the origin of religion started. And that was like a real like entity, like an interdimensional being or something. And he was ousted. But what the new God did, the devil, let's say the evil who took over the spot, just continued on like he was still the same person. Let everyone believe like your children are dying. It's okay. Like that's just part of my will. But he was really like, harvesting their souls and like being completely savage. Everyone's like, oh, he just loves us so much.
He's probably all about do what thou will or whatever.
And Lucifer Lucifer was like, he was the enlightened one. He was the light bringer, right? He was the God and he was overthrown. He's like, and he was just immortalized. Like that guy, he's the devil. And I was like, fuck you. He's like, no.
That's fucking crazy.
It really was God the whole time.
That's a really good theory.
I want to dive into that deep. That's fucking wild.
It's a really cool. We'll have a fucking talk about one time because
that's wild.
I went down the rabbit hole one time because it makes perfect sense. Like if you think of all the war and death and destruction in the world, what kind of loving God would let his creations, which he made in his own image, supposedly, do that to themselves?
Well, it's crazy to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like. Taking the fucking, this apparent evil angel or whatever, you know, and sending him to Earth. Like, of course that's going to fucking do nothing but bad. Like, why, you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's Jesus. Jesus walked to Earth. Maybe that's who it was. Maybe that was the devil walking around without his wings.
That's what I'm saying. And
that's crazy.
And it was a Luciferian guy saying this. He's like, listen, I'm a Luciferian. I go by this, but let me tell you why I believe this. I'm not a bad person, but let me tie. And then he went down this rabbit hole. And he's like, kind of makes sense.
Holy fuck. That's wild.
It's a crazy theory, eh?
Holy shit. Yeah.
So maybe
I want to look into that more. That's cool.
Me too.
So maybe
let's do a case file on that.
Yeah, I'm down.
It's pretty cool. Well, we could just do a case file on just religion in general, I guess, and just go around. But Crowley's just an offshoot of the occult, really, especially of modern occultism, right? All the occult symbolism and all the, like in Hollywood and a lot in American, like American currency and American politics and like all like the Latin words, all like, it's all like Freemasonry, secret societies, probably something to do with Crowley in there somewhere. So I don't know. He's just like, he got what he wanted in the end, right? He actually died. Crowley died alone and a heroin addict.
Yeah, poor, living.
But all he wanted was to be famous and change the world. And 100 years later, he's doing it, right? Yeah. Like his maybe not necessarily his teachings, but his ideas are now coming to light now, right? In the last like 30, 40 years, people are like more sexually expressive. People don't get married that much. People are less religious, right? People are like going that direction. The direction he wanted, but it was 100 years early when he was talking about it. He's like kind of like, he's kind of like Tesla
He's got links to Tesla too.
Does he?
Yeah.
You got some more fucking knowledge you want to drop?
I like it. It's really fucking cool. I actually read this book, but it's a reach.
We like reaches.
Okay. So, yeah. Throughout the 1920s and 30s, London was plagued by the mythical curse of Tutankhamun. As most of you guys already know, Tutankhamun was an Egyptian pharaoh of the 18th dynasty. He's, you know, like, properly known as King Tut. The boy king, right? So King Tut's tomb was uncovered by British archaeologist Howard Carter. More than 20 people linked to opening of King Tut's burial chamber were killed over, you know, the 20s and 30s. So 20 people.
Trying to excavate it.
Yeah, so 20 people, okay? How Crowley ties into this. Okay. After extensive research into Aleister Crowley's private diaries, books, essays, historian Mark Benyon argues that the curse was actually ritualistic killing done by none other than Aleister Crowley.
What? So it's
no curse, just Aleister Crowley, ritual killings. He states that Crowley was a Jack the Ripper obsessed copycat killer. So how does that link to Carter's legendary discovery, right? Crowley believed himself to be a prophet of the ancient Egyptian god Horus. Crowley's religion, philosophy, and life's work, Thelmia, were drawn from ancient Egyptian religion. It's likely that Crowley found the excavation of King Tut's burial chambers sacrilegious and he wanted revenge. Crowley can be linked to at least 7 of these deaths, 6 which took place in London. Okay, so now I got these 7 people that died and how he links to them.
Crazy.
Okay. February 16th, 1923, Raoul Loveday died the same day and the exact same hour as the opening of the burial chamber. He died after drinking blood of a sacrificed cat during one of Crowley's rituals. And it's believed that Crowley poisoned himself. July 10th, 1923. Prince Ali, fabulous he, Ali Ababa. Strong as 10 regular men, definitely. He cased... how do you do it? He faced the galloping hordes. 100 bad guys with swords. That's all I got.
What?
That's from Aladdin, isn't it?
Yeah. Prince Ali Kamel Fahmy Bey was shot dead by his wife in London's Savory Hotel shortly after he was photographed visiting the tomb. His wife was a known follower of Aleister Crowley and one of his lovers. All right. September 23rd, 1923, Aubrey Herbert died of complications from a routine dental operation at his private home. He had just returned from visiting the tomb. This was just days after Prince Ali's wife was acquitted from that murder. So just within days of her getting set free. Okay? And she's having an ongoing affair with Crowley at the time.
Okay.
November 15th, 29. So a little bit of gap here. Captain Richard Bethel was Howard Carter, the guy who excavated the tomb's personal secretary. Bethel was smothered in his sleep at the Mayfair's exclusive bath club, where Crowley was staying as a guest of novelist W. Somerset Maugham. So Crowley was at that fucking place at the exact same time staying.
Right.
Okay. February 20th, 30, year later, Lord Westbury Bethel, the captain's father, he was thrown off his 7th floor balcony. Westbury had numerous artifacts that was given to him by his son from the tomb, and they were all missing after this. Okay. February 24th, 1930, Edgar Steele died of complications from a minor stomach operation. Steele was in charge of the tomb at London's British Museum. Okay?
Okay.
November 23rd, 1934, Ernest Wallace Budge, former head of the museum, Egyptian antiquities, and he was a fellow occultist and friend of Crowley. He was also found smothered in his bed. Okay? So these are all people that had ties to... The tomb of Tutankhamun.
To the artifacts of
Tutankhamun. That are all tied into this curse, right?
Right.
That were all killed the same time that Crowley was in London. Okay? So, correlates every time that Crowley was in London, one of these people died. So, in Crowley's diaries, the day after each one of these murders, it was said that he felt uplifted and relieved.
Okay? Oh, wow.
He was obsessed with Jack the Ripper and often socialized with Jack the Ripper suspect, Walter Seckert.
And just a quick add point, the maid who he lost his virginity to, his mother's maid, is believed to have been a victim of Jack the Ripper.
I did hear that, yeah.
Okay, that's fucking spooky. Now here's more Jack shit. Crowley wrote in his diaries that the 1888 Whitechapel murders formed a pentagram. Okay. He was the first person to come up with that. The five of these first murders form the shape of a pentagram.
Get out.
Yeah.
Well, but aren't they in different parts of the world?
No, these ones were all done in London, though.
Oh, so the murders were all in London.
Not all of them. Some of them died in Egypt as well. And you know what I mean? But the ones I'm reading to are all the ones that were done in London the same time Crowley was.
Well, Crowley's in London. Yeah. All the people associated with Tutankhamun's artifacts all died. And the deaths
suspiciously, too.
And the deaths map a pentagram.
Yeah. And five of them map to pentagram. Now, Crowley wrote in his diaries that he personally believed that each one of Jack's murders gave him special powers, including invisibility. Crowley wrote in his journal later, after three or four of these killings, that he recently acquired the ability to become invisible. Right? So he says, he hypothesized that Jack the Ripper gained special powers with each murder. And later in his journal, he says, I had just acquired the ability to become invisible. Right?
But
he famously tested his invisibility as he walked through the London Royal Cafe dressed in that weird mustard coat that he wears that you see all those pictures.
Yeah.
And he had a big occultist symbol on him and he walked through this really famous London cafe. And I guess everybody knew who he was, right? So they were all fucking too freaked out and pretended like they didn't see him. So he actually thought he was invisible.
But that could be saying, maybe not saying like invisibility as like I can make myself not seen, but maybe he was talking about I'm invisible in the sense that he's this monster doing these things and yet he can walk around in the day and that's invisible to everyone.
Well, yeah, maybe, but he actually says in his fucking diaries that he believes he actually has the power to become invisible.
Interesting.
And he actually writes how he tested it and how it actually worked. And it's like, it's wrote like people, it was in the papers, like people witnessed fucking local evilest man alive or whatever, Aleister Crowley walking through London fucking square or whatever. Right. So it's like noted that he actually
dressed in a mustard cape.
Yeah. So, but there is like, you know what? It's a reach, but there's a lot of fucking.
That's odd. Definitely, yeah, right? Man.
The last part of Aleister Crowley I wanted to talk about tonight. One thing we hadn't touched on yet. He was a yoga master.
Right. Yeah. I think he was actually. Yeah.
He wrote a book called The 8 Lectures on Yoga. And it's believed that he helped kind of bring yoga to the West, but he's distorted the practice of yoga that's practiced in the West. And I read this thing that you do all these weird hand signals and that's not authentic with the original, but that's like Crowley's distortions of the teachings.
I knew it was evil. Like, I fucking knew yoga was evil.
Yeah. And then it's like,
I fucking hate it. It's horrible.
It makes you beacons of mental harm, megalomania, destructive rage, power mongering.
That's why bitches be crazy.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Physical disease. And it just says like his practice and he's kind of distorted this and turned people into these beacons for this negativity.
I can't wait. Now I fucking finally have an excuse to be like, no, I'm not going to yoga. This is why.
Yeah.
Eat it.
It's evil.
Suck it. It's funny because my mom always said yoga's evil. She's like, I can't do yoga. It's evil. It's against God.
It's like the greatest benefit for your body in the world.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it's fucking. Well, at so what expense? You, at what expense?
Crowley lover.
Opening up your mind to evil entities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like lamb.
Buddy, I've done the fucking, I've done it with you. I've no done the that. Fucking, I know Lamb. That's Lisa Lamb. That's
right. No,
that's the alien that tied.
Yeah, Lisa Lamb.
Yeah, I remember that.
Don't, okay. So this is the last thing I wanted to touch on. I remember so when that. Crowley was in New York, he did this fucking ritual. Fuck, what was it called? I lost it here. He did a ritual called the Amalantra working, which is a theorized process that to deliberately open a channel to the ephemeral cosmic influence so extra dimensional entities could enter our universe. And when he did it, supposedly he made contact with an entity known as Lamb, which we said back in case file 9,
something like that.
And he drew a picture of what he thought, what like he channeled through him.
It's like a short gray, right?
It's like a fucking short gray. It's got a little gray alien with a giant head. It doesn't really have the almond eyes. It kind of has like, he drew it with like kind of eyebrows and a cloak, but it has the big bulbous head, kind of like almond shaped. but doesn't have the big black eyes. But supposedly he made contact with this entity, and he opened up a interdimensional rift between our dimension and another one. And that's, I guess, where supposedly some of these ETs came from.
Well, that's crazy.
Well, and if you think about, like, that's 1918. He drew this picture. One might argue that that is the first picture of a short gray.
It could be. The first drawn picture, definitely.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Man, he's just got... He's got loads of shit, man.
Buddy, we didn't even touch the surface. Like, we didn't. So much more shit.
It's like another one of those topics where you could start a podcast called the Crowley Podcast and have 100 episodes and just do a different thing for an hour and a half each time.
You could literally start with him, talk about one aspect of his life, and then just talk about how it's affected and where it's still seen today.
Yep, 100%.
But that's all I got. I'm on that stupid thing where you guys got daylight saving times, but I didn't, so it's actually 10 o'clock here.
Oh, so you want to wrap it up? Yeah, we're going for a while there. It's pretty good.
I got to go to bed. And I got terrible news. My GarageBand stopped recording at 48 minutes.
I knew it would fuck up GarageBand.
And I wasn't checking it.
Doesn't mean anything. Well, nothing, I was going to use your recording instead of the Skype recording so it would sound better, but
I thought you were going to say that your GarageBand broke up. I didn't even know you were in a GarageBand. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What's the name of your garage band?
The Circle of Jerks.
Is that fucking... is that lady from the fucking Meat Draw that sings Raise a Little Hell, is she your lead singer or what?
Yeah, she is.
Nice.
I play drums. Perfect. I've got one of the Purple Wizards to be my drummer.
Purple Wizards!
You broke up the Purple Wizard. You broke up the Purple Wizards.
Yeah, well...
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, no, that's what, I like talking about that kind of shit.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It just it opened up a whole fucking can. And
I really want to talk about religion now and go down that.
I totally do too. That blew my mind.
I would love to do that.
I think like we got religion. I want to do more like occult symbolism in like modern society. And what we're gonna have on? So our newest guest announcement. He's not finalized yet, but he said he'd do it. I talked to him firsthand. Greg Carlwood from the Higher Side Chats. It's probably the best interview style conspiracy show out there. He always has a new guest on every episode talking about a whole plethora of topics. I think he's going to come on. We're going to talk about occult symbolism in modern society sometime in the next month or two. So we got him. Raven's still coming. Guys, he's a famous athlete. So he's
a busy guy.
He's a busy guy.
Yeah, he's a busy guy.
We tried to have him on last time Braden was in town, but it didn't work out. So that's coming. We'll probably do it when Braden's here next.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Back in December. Yeah. Or in December?
Brains. Prolapser or my Braden's
just say it.
Social media person of the week. I don't know. What was I
get the fucking peanut butter in your mouth and say it.
Is Miranda Medina.
Yeah.
She said that I'm her favorite. That's why I picked her this week.
That's if you say Braden's your favorite, you will get on the air. That's what he just pretty told much. You.
She's a Canucks fan.
Atta girl.
So she was snapping some Canucks scores with me and overall good person. Always, I love the Snapchats. Always send Snapchats. Someone sent me a half hour one of their kid. Hold on. I'm going to find the name here. Care Bear. And her kid was talking about seeing these three giant men in the forest wearing suits with red ties. One was bald, two had long hair, but they were giants. And her mom's like, why didn't you say anything to us? She's like, I was scared. And I was like, oh, that's fucking weird.
That's crazy.
It's just a weird story. But she like sent me a Snapchat of her talking to her daughter.
Don't let your kids go in the woods alone.
No, fuck never. That.
No, it's fucked.
A lot of times they don't come back.
No.
And then that's it. That's it from any...
I've been a little slacking on Zell's prolapsers of the week, so I got, I think I'm going to do three here, maybe four. We got Rich O'Brien and Justin Milbank. These guys are huge fans from California. And Rich had a funny laser bullet story like you had on the last case file. He'd be like, damn, man, I thought it'd be cool if there was pet condiments, like pet mustard and ketchup and shit. And then a few weeks later, I guess he searched for it. And then a few weeks later, he searched again. And then it was there. Now there's fucking bark Bark BQ, Mustard, and Ketchup.
That's fucking awesome.
And Jason Milbank, he's a fucking beauty too. Those two guys have been just loving the show for the last six months or something. And then we have Jonathan. Oh, his name is too long to show up. Jonathan Ma. What the fuck? Sorry, buddy.
You know who you are. You know who you are.
Jonathan Munn something. He has sent us a haunted Ouija board, but it's not a Ouija board. It's called Deadlines. And it is a inspiration through visitation. Some type of new Ouija board. And there's some insane stories attached to it. So can't wait to play that.
I'm sick that day.
Andrew's not coming because I think Andrew fucking knocks off the fucking entities because he's too scared.
You insist on me fucking being there. So
yeah, well, next time you're not coming.
Perfect.
And then we have, I got one more. I gotta say one more here. Well, I gotta fucking pull it up real quick. He is Kyle Jones, our newest top tier Patreon supporter. Oh, I just dropped the phone too. But if on the last episode we had Chewbacca.
Chewbacca, huge success. I love Chewbacca.
Yeah, he's a beauty. He's supporting the show top tier. So we're gonna have originally what I wanted to do for our top tier is what you get your own segment where you just like you record your own 10-15 minute segment and we put on the show. Because we can't have people on every time. But now what we're going to do, if you're a top-tier supporter, you get to come on the show you got to come on Theorize with us for one case file. And after that, then we'll try and work with you other ways because we just can't have people on every episode. And originally I had it at 10, but I think I'm going to drop it down to 5. So there's going to be one more spot because then we just can't do that many. And you want to read some reviews, Brayden?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Great source for research. Ivanovic 6. Love you guys, even though I don't drink beer or hang out with dudes. Listening to you guys makes me feel like I'm hanging out with my buddies, and it's awesome. Keep that concept. I don't have to do too much research. Thankfully, Mr. Conspiracy has that covered.
Funny.
And then I got F yeah from Elok. Sereklov. I'm going to do that one. I imagine he's Russian. Hold on. Let me think about how I would speak in Russian.
good luck.
As long as it's not like your Asian one, we're good.
A great show.
That's Borat.
It's a great show to crack beer to. I'm going to pawn the Ron for Halloween. Keep the prolapsing.
Okay.
That's it. Was that not good?
That was just great.
No, it was fucking mint, man.
Absolutely amazing. Okay, I got one. We haven't read a lot, so we'll read a few because we're falling way behind, unfortunately. So here we go. Fun and offer a lot of interesting theories from Mahino 93 from USA. These guys are awesome. Here we have a podcast about conspiracy theories, aliens, etc., all while having some fun. I enjoy listening while sitting in my boring cubicle all day. Get out of that job right now. They really make my day go by so quick. Thanks, guys. I hope there are plenty more stories and conspiracies to come. There are, and there will be. We've been going like every 8 or 9 days releasing one that's pretty good for us, so.
Pretty good. The great lull's coming.
Warning, around Christmas time, there'll be a little bit of a lull. That's just the way she goes.
When am I coming down?
Well, if you're coming down for that long, we should be able to knock off a few.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm thinking. Hold on. Let me tell you right now. I'm going to come down December 22nd and... I might go back for January 2nd, but I think I'm going to have to the 8th off. I don't know. So I'll be there for a pretty good jaunt.
Well, that will give us time because if you're a Patreon member, we will be recording some Dungeons and Dragons.
I can't fucking wait.
It's going to be so fun.
I've never done it before.
That's what we'll do the first one when I come down in December. We'll plan everything for December.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be me, Andrew, Brayden, and Dan's going to be the dungeon master. We're going to record the whole thing. Man, I can't wait. We'll probably have a 10-hour session one day, I bet. We're playing. We got to play all day, I think. You got to play till the campaign's done.
It's perfect because we can start playing at night, drinking beers, and Dan's just getting up, having coffee.
Yeah, so we'll get belligerent, and he'll just be like, he'll be on his game.
Oh, I can't fucking wait. We're dressing up, too.
Oh, yeah, we all have to wear
clothes. Know what I still have in here?
The wizard cloak?
The cloak's in here somewhere. Can't wait to wear it.
Oh, I can't fucking wait. I'm so excited.
It's going to be fun. So that's going to be released for Patreon supporters, which we have quite a few, and thank you very much for supporting the show, because fuck ads, and you guys are the best.
If you haven't noticed the since Case File 60, I would say the quality of our intro.
60?
50.
Oh, 50.
50 was JFK, right?
Hey, qualities, we're always striving for more. Yeah. If you listen, think of your, like, the best podcast, the best produced podcast, like fucking Radio Lab and like TED Talks and all these stuff. These guys have a team of like 30 people behind them. They got audio designers and all these guys. It's just us doing it. So the more you support, the better it gets. But here's my call for our supporters. I know we have the greatest podcast fans in the galaxy, and the average for support for a show is about 1% of the listeners, which we're a little bit under at the moment. But I think we can get to 3. If we get to 3%, this is my guarantee. More live streams, videos, show notes. So if you want to know where we get all of our information, I will take the time to compile a list.
We're going to send you, every week we'll send you a genuine note from Mr. Conspiracy's notebook.
What are those fucking little flashcards?
3 words on it. I know shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I will, like, if...
Jack the Ripper, unsolved.
Unsolved. Thanks, Mr. Conspiracy. You're awesome. No, but if we get there, like, I want to put together like where we actually got all our information and like put it, well, because we have the new website now.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So like I'm gonna post, like I'll start posting like all the information, like,
all the
notes.
Videos of where what we watched, what we read.
We got a video coming soon too. That should be pretty good.
Yeah. So we actually did record a new Patreon subscriber video, and I think it's gonna be pretty funny.
I fucking hope
we had
so.
A couple. Couple of real time.
Nothing's being cut.
Nothing's being cut.
Nothing's cut.
It's coming to you raw.
Real time.
So it'll be fun.
All right, guys. Well, I gotta
let's just quickly say, if you want to follow us, we always forget to say, if you want to follow us on Twitter at Truth Is Out There, T-H-U-R-R, or just search Alien Theorist Theorizing on Twitter. It will pop right up. Same thing.
We're on Instagram, Snapchat. Truth Is Out There. Find us everywhere. And make sure to go and support us on support your boys on Patreon.
Beer Fund.
$1 or more gets you early access. $5 or more gets you early access. And bonus shit. Go for it. And that's about it.
And as always, live long and prolapse.
Oh, yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.